Welcome to a special edition of Path to Zero, the podcast about clean energy and the journey toward a low-carbon future. We've traveled to New York City to take part in Climate Week conversations. Now, here's your host, Tucker Perkins.
I'm always excited to meet with smart environmental journalists who tackle the complex energy and climate issues. No one fits this profile better than my guest for this episode, Amy Harder. Amy is the founding executive editor of Cypher, which covers opportunities and challenges of the energy transition. If you're in the industry and you're not reading Cypher, then you're missing out. Previously, she spent nearly 5 years as an energy reporter for Axios, where she interviewed some of the biggest CEOs in the industry. She was also a reporter for the Wall Street Journal and the National Journal. Amy, I'm just a huge fan of your work. Thanks for being with us today, and welcome to Path to Zero.
You're very welcome. I'm thrilled to be here.
Lots of things to talk with you about, but we're here at Climate Week. I know you're really kind of new to Cypher. Talk to us about Cypher and what it is and how you use it.
Cypher is a new publication that I lead. Cypher, the word, means zero, as in zero greenhouse gas emissions. That's a goal. What we're doing is what I call mission-driven journalism. So we're doing journalism just like any other publication, except we've assumed that our readers know and acknowledge climate change is a problem, and they're looking for solutions. So that's what Cypher does. And we're pretty new. We launched actually 2 years ago as a newsletter platform. And just the other week, we actually launched a full website. So we're staffing up with a full team, and we have grand plans in the works. So we're excited to show our journalism with more of the world.
Do some people that you talk with still struggle to realize that climate change is real and needs to be acted on?
Yeah, I think there's always going to be a segment of the population that distrusts mainstream science and questions the connection between extreme weather and a human exacerbated climate change. Now, to be clear, we shouldn't connect every single dot with every single extreme weather event because it's complicated science. But at the end of the day, the science is very clear that droughts and heat waves and wildfires are likely to be exacerbated by climate change. And that's really the clear message that we're trying to send with the basis of our journalism that then looks at solutions, largely technology, but really new innovation of all kinds, whether that's new policies at the government level, new technologies, new ways of finding solutions. And I can get into that more if you would like, but we're really tackling this massive problem through the lens of solutions.
Well done. In your work, you've interviewed some of the most influential CEOs, just people on the cutting edge of this conversation, government officials, just so many people. Anybody stand out? Any conversations stand out that you've interviewed?
Yeah, I would say a couple. One time I interviewed the late Senate Majority Leader Harry Reid, and it was a pretty wonky story. It was extremely important. And what I mean by that is he, who has since passed away, was the leader of Nevada for a very long time, and he opposed the leader of this wonky regulatory agency that I'm sure your listeners are probably familiar with, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, FERC. And he just had it in for the leader, the appointee that then President Obama had chosen. And so he influenced the decision very aggressively. And so it was just a classic story of Washington power asserting itself, where you wouldn't think, oh, this is a presidentially appointed position. Well, actually, when the Senate Majority Leader has an opinion, he's going to let it be known. And so that was one interesting one. And today I spend a lot of my time focusing on talking to entrepreneurs and clean energy business executives who are really trying to find the solutions to climate change. And one relatively recent example, I was interviewing a top executive at Ørsted, which is a big offshore wind executive. This was a couple of years ago, and we were sitting on the shores of Atlantic City, where they're aiming to put a bunch of wind turbines out into the ocean. And it's really striking to look at that moment and reflect back on it, because today the offshore wind industry is facing a lot of challenges with inflation, supply chain issues, and cost increases as a result of all of that. And so it's just really interesting to be able to connect some of those dots between the conversations I've had over the years to the present.
Yeah, Ørsted's certainly in the news every day right now. Interesting. You know, as you think about this, you deal with governments and you deal with big industry and small innovators. Do you see a thesis emerging where the solutions are going to come from? Is it going to be about big companies, public utilities, big oil, or is it going to be from the bottom up with just small innovators?
This is definitely a cliched answer, but the answer has to be everything and everybody. This is somewhat of a tangent, but I think it'll be a relevant, interesting one. There's been some attempts to do climate change in Hollywood, right? So there's this TV show called Extrapolations on Apple TV. Highly recommend it if you're interested in the space. Full disclosure, the reviews are terrible, very mixed. People didn't like how it was all over the place and disparate, and there wasn't a common narrative or theme. And my answer is, yeah, that's climate change. That's why this problem is so hard, because it's all over the place. And that's why the solutions have to come from all over the place. I've written this one idea a couple of times, both as my time leading Cypher, but also previously when I was leading energy coverage at Axios. And I talked about the different puzzle pieces of climate change. And cliches work for a reason, so that's why I'm employing this one. You really need all the puzzle pieces together to get change. So you need the activists that are marching in the streets this week for Climate Week, and you need the entrepreneurs who are wanting to get rich off a new climate technology. That's the system we live in, right, is capitalism. And then you need the government to come in. And another piece, which we're experiencing more and more of, is we need the experience of more extreme weather, which is increasingly being exacerbated by climate change. We need all of those pieces. And so you need everybody. I think the challenge is something that I'm noticing more and more is that as all these pieces are getting closer together and getting closer to finishing this puzzle, we're really noticing that there's a lot of disagreement. And even if we agree that climate change is a big problem and we need to solve it, there's a lot of disagreement about how to solve it. And that's exactly what Cypher is covering. And I would love to share some examples with you on that. But we spent decades covering the should we and why of climate change. Why should we do something and should we do something? We spent 30 years debating that in Washington, D.C. and around the country and around the world. We've now, with the passage of the Inflation Reduction Act and the continuing implementation of the Paris Climate Agreement, we're now discussing the how, and that's really difficult.
Yeah, excellent. You definitely feel a change in the air, right, to your point. I want to talk about your interview with John Podesta, kind of one I followed and loved it. You covered so much ground, but there you had a really fascinating conversation around environmental justice. You feel like we're properly addressing the impact on the lower income communities in this transformation?
You know, I was just talking to an MIT class about this very topic, which it was amazing to see the interest in this topic with them. And I think the short answer is we're doing better than we have done. I think the last several years with the tragic killing of George Floyd and the protests that arose from that, we're really seeing a concerted, serious effort to grapple with some of the injustices that have happened in the world. Obviously, that wasn't related to the environment and climate change, but it's all wrapped up into this general same thing. And so I think we collectively as a society and the Biden administration specifically are really starting to grapple with it in a serious way. So I think that's definitely room for, you know, good improvement there. The other side of the challenge, though, is that it's really difficult to do some of these things that we need to do and please everybody. And so some of the concerns about building direct air capture in some of these communities or hydrogen, these require big infrastructure and they're unknown to a lot of people. And for example, a lot of these technologies like direct air capture and hydrogen are being built whether you like it or not, and would love to get into that, by the incumbent oil and gas industry. And those industries have lost the trust of a lot of these communities that are lower income and communities of color. And so if you have that mistrust in your past, and then you see, oh, this new technology is coming into my neighborhood and I don't understand it, and I'm reflexively not trustworthy, that needs to be addressed. And you can't just bulldoze literally and figuratively over people's concerns. You really have to get in there and have these serious conversations. And that's something that the administration is going to have to lead, and also companies and developers who are trying to do that as well. And I hope that there's forward progress on that in a way that these communities can be respected, but also that we can build out this technology in a rapid way, because that's also needed.
I mean, again, the conversation has moved to another point, and I hope eventually it moves yet again forward, because there is a long ways to go around it. But I love that interview with John Podesta. You also all the time talking about innovation. It's kind of really what you do through all your reporting. Any kind of innovation jump out at you and just really excite you?
You know, I think that, yeah, right. So the word innovation has been sort of co-opted to mean sort of a buzzword that doesn't have much meaning. But for us at Cypher, it really means, how can we do things in a way that we haven't done them before? And that's sort of the whole genesis of Cypher itself. So just a quick tangent on that. So we're a small team right now. We have four journalists, including myself, with a very global footprint. We have coverage in the Middle East, Brussels, Belgium, in Europe, and the U.S., both in Seattle, where I live, and also Washington, D.C. And so we're looking at it through the solutions lens. We're currently supported by Breakthrough Energy, which is a clean energy organization funded by Bill Gates. Over time, we'll likely seek additional support in the realm of, perhaps if your listeners may be familiar in the healthcare space, Kaiser Health News is really our North Star, to really provide explanatory journalism in a way that can help move the conversation forward on these exact topics that we're talking about, such as the education about direct air capture and renewable hydrogen. So really trying to find a way to address these hard topics from a place of nuance and humility, realizing that we all agree there's this problem. How can we air these challenges that we have? And so specifically, one story that I'm working on that I probably don't want to share too much with your readers or listeners, but stay tuned, is looking at a new way to help build new clean energy infrastructure. And so there's this really cool effort underway at a university where they're really trying to come at this a new way. So that's all I can say now, but suffice to say, it's been a really fun story to report on, and maybe we can share the link when you air this. But I think we have to be willing to do things a different way, because we're living in a new world.
Yeah, and we can do things a different way, right? Innovation, computers, modeling, just thought, research data, it all is coming together to allow us, I find, to do things that 5 years ago either we tried and failed, or we thought we couldn't do, and now just 5 years later, we see evidence of that all the time in our work around new technologies that just didn't work, and all of a sudden they work
right
flawlessly.
And that's, you know, taking the past to be a precedent for the future may not be that helpful in this space. Now, the past is always helpful, but we know the saying, if people had been asked how they would like to get around back in the horse and buggy days, they would have said a faster horse, right, as opposed to an internal combustion engine car. And so, you know, today, even a year ago, 2 years ago, we wouldn't have known about the ease of artificial intelligence and ChatGPT. I, on a regular basis, use AI to help with questions such as, what's a nice small gift to give my team as a token of appreciation? It's just a very simple question. I'm not asking it hard things. I'm certainly not asking it to do any of my writing, which, by the way, we all know this, but ChatGPT is the most cliched, terrible writer I've ever met, and I would not want that thing on my team. But suffice to say, we never would have thought ChatGPT would have been around a year ago. And so that's just something that keeps me humble, keeps our team humble. One more thing on this point that I think is important. In terms of the changing climate and more extreme weather, there's this saying that I saw once that goes something like, we shouldn't think of this as the hottest year of our lives, which, by the way, it is. 2023 is likely to be the hottest year ever, thanks to an El Nino, which is supercharging the warming impacts that are already underway. But think of this as one of the coolest years for the rest of our lives. When you flip it that way, you're like, wow, I did not think about it that way. And so for me, I try to be humble about what the past doesn't tell us about the future and how we just got to put the norms behind us because things are different.
Yeah, I think we better throw the playbook away, I think, for sure. You've written quite a bit about global venture capital and investments flowing in. And I think one of the things I saw you report on is that in both 22 and really this far through 2023, global investment into clean energy has trailed. You got any reasons to understand that? You think that's about massive government? Or is it just about confusion? What's causing that?
Well, the numbers have dropped compared to their earlier amounts in earlier years. I think the high was about 2021. That was really, you know, we had the pandemic, and coming out of that, people were supercharged to do all this stuff, and then suddenly the pandemic hangover sits in, and money across the industry, across the board, across all industries, really pulled back. So compared to climate tech investing back in 2021, we're down relatively significantly. I think you might be citing a story I did based upon PitchBook data. However, it is my understanding that climate tech investing has held on a little bit better than other sectors. And I think that's because investors in climate tech, they know they're in it for the long haul. That's part of the challenge of climate tech investing. You are not going to make money tomorrow, next month, even next year. You know, I spent the other night in my hotel room watching Shark Tank. It's the best show you can binge because I feel like you learned something, maybe a little bit. And, you know, you're not seeing renewable hydrogen companies, entrepreneurs on that show. That's because you're not going to make a quick buck. Instead, you see this, you know, this thing to hold your beer while you're fishing. You know, it's silly, but you might make money on that tomorrow. And so I think money has pulled back less in this space because they know they're going to have to weather this storm and a lot of other storms up ahead. So it could be worse. And the last thing I'll say on this is some executives in this space that I talked to say that some of this, it was a little frothy there around 2021. Lots of money was coming in. And now the people not investing, you know what? They probably shouldn't have been investing anyway. So it helped kind of clean out some of the underbrush.
We're here in New York for Climate Week. I know you're just starting it. It's going to really go on all week. What are some of the things you're most looking forward to here in New York, the conversations around Climate Week? Anything in particular?
This is really, to me, a preview of the conversations and the divisions and the tension that we'll see at the United Nations Climate Conference in Dubai in a couple of months. And so I know the United Arab Emirates, which is hosting the Climate Conference in Dubai, they have a big representation here, so I'll be looking to see what coverage comes out of that. The big climate summit that the UN Secretary General is holding will also be really a preview for the main event in Dubai. And just this week, we ran a story by our Brussels correspondent, Anka Gerzu, and it's a really sort of lighthearted but serious story that I think does a good job of framing what a week like Climate Week is about, which we're all gathering, we're all just talking, right? So it's a lot of words, not as much action at it for a week like this. And so her story was really looking at the semantics of our climate fight. Do you want to phase down fossil fuels? Do you want to phase out fossil fuels? Do you want to phase down emissions? Do you want to phase out emissions? In this world of diplomacy and climate change, these words really matter. And people, and I know this from my government sources, they spend hours and hours debating certain words. And, you know, you end up with like a, at one point, there was this run-on sentence of like 100 words, and the writer in me is just like, put a period in there and start a new sentence. So I think that's what I'm looking for, is to see this is setting the stage for what's known as COP28 in Dubai.
Will you be there?
I will be there. So if you are, we'll have to have a...
It's good.
Yeah.
Very interesting. You know, we've spent a lot of time today talking with a variety of people about the wide path to decarbonization. Speaking of words, we argue among ourselves about decarbonization, defossilization, spend a lot of time there. But really talking about that wide path. And while some people talk about all of the above, I tend to recoil because I don't believe it is about all of the above. It's about some of the above. But one of the conversations has been around renewable liquid fuels. In your reporting and your conversations, and as you see kind of the evolution to a better place, do you see a place for renewable liquid fuels?
Oh, certainly, especially in the hard-to-abate transportation sectors like aviation and shipping. I know those are two big ones where sustainable aviation fuel, SAF, known for short, that's really, you know, the aviation sector is very hard. There's just not a lot of solutions. And there's a lot of controversy with different types of feedstock, raw material for SAF. Ultimately, for the long haul flights, the ones that are going to get me to Dubai and a lot of other people to Dubai, and you will hear the activists decrying the carbon emissions of those, which it's a valid point, but just one that I just don't engage with. You know, SAF, you need a liquid fuel. There's a reason, scientifically speaking, that petroleum products work and that we have used them for centuries is because they're extremely energy dense and effective. Now, they have this big environmental negative impact. That is obviously why we're doing everything we're doing. But that's why drop-in fuels, so to speak, biofuels, which have their own controversial debate that we can get into if you would like. But I think particularly for these hard-to-abate sectors, I think it's going to be very important.
Good. Glad to hear you say that. All right, we'd love to have a little fun on this show. So we tend to, one, use magic. We learned that from Harry Potter, I think. We're going to hand you a magic wand. You get to use that magic wand for one thing in the next year that you think, in your views, would have the most beneficial impact on climate and this conversation. How would you use that wand, Amy?
I would get rid of misinformation. And this idea that right now I'm reporting on a story about the challenges of building things, which is why this answer is coming from that experience. You know, I've been seeing a lot of things about offshore wind and connecting things that just have no basis in fact. And, you know, building really big things is already extremely difficult because of all the challenges that are presented when you try to build a big infrastructure around people. Really, the last thing we need is to have just sort of the bigger misinformation battle descend onto climate. That's getting a little bit outside my wheelhouse. I don't know if a magic wand can be that prescriptive.
Yeah. The magic wand, you can do anything.
But that, you know, absent erasing all the carbon emissions and sucking it out like a vacuum cleaner, I suppose that would erase any need for any of this. But I think that's one that's been top of my mind, and it's really the wild card when it comes to building new things. It's one thing to deal with people who are just unhappy with or concerned about the environmental impacts of technology. It's a whole another one where when we're dealing with people that are being influenced by misinformation.
And the sources of that misinformation, are they people that stand to benefit if this doesn't gain traction? Do they not believe in the what are the reasons for promoting this?
I think it's all of the above. I think in some cases there's a financial influence to be had. I think in other cases, clean energy and climate change of course has been pretty controversial politically so for quite a long time. That's nothing new. But clean energy and offshore wind is an example of something that has more recently become more of a culture issue. Now, I don't watch Fox News, so I've only read this. I don't watch any TV news, to be clear, including Fox, because I don't own a TV that shows TV on the news. But it's my understanding that Tucker Carlson, when he was on Fox, did some segment about offshore wind. And I think it's a sign of the times when we have Tucker Carlson talking about offshore wind. And, you know, I've done enough digging to myself to really determine that the whale deaths, which is one of the things he was talking about, there's really no basis to attribute those to any activity by the offshore wind industry. But that concern has just, you know, it's definitely a concern. Nobody wants whales dying. But it has come to this this concern and has blown up into this massive campaign of we can't do any of this because of the whales. And it's just really, that's one specific example of how it's become a culture issue, and it's transcended any financial influence. I don't think Tucker Carlson personally cares, frankly, one way or the other about offshore wind. I think it's become a culture issue, and that's why somebody like him would cover this.
Excellent. Great use of your wand. Love that. And I hope you're successful with that.
And if I had enough magic left over, I would just get rid of misinformation, generally speaking. One addendum to this, though, because, you know, I grew up in a rural part of the country. Some of my family members are conservative. I realize the word misinformation can be a loaded word in and of itself. So we don't need to open that can of worms. But suffice to say, I realize one person's misinformation is another person's fact, which is an unfortunate part of the world we live in. I just wish that we can all have a little bit more humility and an eagerness to learn, because none of us know as much as we think.
But the truth is generally the truth. You can report through the truth. That's right. We've all become clear at moving those facts around sometimes. Great use of your wand. One other thing we love to do is to plant a tree in your honor. You've spent great time with us. You've had a great career and shared with us some of your experiences. Anywhere in particular you'd love us to plant a tree? We'd like to go to a national forest if you know of one.
Well, I do love running in forests. I live in Seattle, Washington, and I just, forest bathing is an actual term. You should look it up. But I don't know if this is possible, but I would love for you to plant a tree in they call them heat domes or places in cities, concrete jungles, where they need more greenery, because the greenery helps cool down cities. You know, the central district in Seattle is often 5 to 10 degrees warmer than other parts of Seattle because there's no trees there. So we might have to talk offline about this, but let's find a place in a city that has no trees, and let's plant some trees so we can give those people shade, and maybe in Phoenix, because Phoenix is extremely hot and it needs more trees, something to help, because there's really scientifically proven cooling effect if you have more trees in a neighborhood.
We can do that. That's a great choice. Before we go, I'll give you a chance to tell us anything you want us to tell us about Cypher, about what you're doing in New York, about things that are coming up for you soon. Anything?
Certainly. Well, I would love all of your listeners to visit cyphernews.com, where we cover all the climate solutions that the world is debating. We have a weekly newsletter that goes out every Wednesday, and we have a really incredible team and other exciting things in the pipeline, no pun intended. So would love to invite your listeners to sign up for our newsletter.
Well, we are avid followers of Amy Harder. We've loved your work at Axios, and we've really enjoyed that transition to Cypher. So thank you for being with us. Good luck here in New York at Climate Week, and so glad to have you on Path to Zero. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to a special edition of Path to Zero with Tucker Perkins from Climate Week in New York City. If you like what you've heard, subscribe and rate us on your favorite podcast app. You can email us with questions or comments to pathtozero@propane.com.